Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist here on Real Liberty Media. I'm going to invite you at this time of year, fall, my favorite season, kind of kicks off what I know is going to be like 6 to 9 months of cooler weather, some awesome storms, maybe thunderstorms, some freezing rain, snow. Come along with me and catch up on some shows over at Real Liberty Media. You can listen to Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony. He's going to arm you for some counter propaganda tactics. Listen to the Dork Table, all kinds of interesting conversations going on there. You can also catch It's All Connected. Grimner and Circle will kind of connect all the dots for you, no matter what the subject. They're going to connect it up for you. And Free Your Mind is a great show, talks about liberty and freedom. Those two, Grimner and Moose Girl, have a great show. Some great archives there. Listen to them and kind of become familiar with being totally free. Ponder Gander has some great topics. He's a deep thinker with a lot of good subject matter. You can catch me, the Redneck Dentist. And we also have two musical shows you can listen to. The Sunday Blues, which are archived, and the Top 10 Countdown, which has top 10 songs from years past with a little bit of history or behind-the-scenes story on each one. So join me, the Redneck Dentist, over on Real Liberty Media, catching up on some of these archived podcasts. It's a great time of year to do it. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me here on the weekend. I appreciate it. It's a beautiful day here in Sheridan, Oregon. Well, right now it is. We're looking forward to having some rain come in this evening about 6 o'clock. And then rain all day tomorrow. I am so thankful we are past the heat part of the year. I hate summer. It's kind of funny. I mean, I deal with it okay, but I just don't like it. I don't like the heat. I don't like the sun. I don't like the fire danger. I don't like anything about summertime except for the long days. That's kind of cool. I mean, long sunlight, extended sunlight. That's what I should say. Uh-oh. Okay, I just want to go over a couple kind of quick things before we get started, and I have a little bit of kind of entertaining things, I hope, and then we're going to get into some serious stuff today. I think it's going to be entertaining, and I want to remind everybody again, be sure and catch me on October 30th, because I'm going to tell you, excuse me, I'm going to cut that out of the podcast version. I'm going to tell you a pretty funny story, a Halloween story that me and my buddy did when we were in junior high school. And every time I think of this story, I just laugh my butt off because it's flipping hilarious. Maybe it won't be when you listen to it, but honest to God, it's a hilarious story. So October 30th, I think that's the day before, I mean, obviously it's the day before Halloween, but I think that's a Saturday, so we'll be doing a little bit of a Halloween show. At least I'm going to tell that one story. A couple things. Last week I was talking about the applesauce from my 4-year-old apple tree. I just got to tell you, that freaking apple tree has so many apples on it. So we've run 2 batches so far of applesauce, and I was looking at that tree. There's still 10 to 20 gallons of apples left on that tree. So we're going to be doing applesauce again tomorrow. And maybe one more day, and then the tree will be done. But, man, that is fantastic. Just 4 years old, and that thing. I don't know how many gallons of applesauce we have put up now, but it's quite a bit. So that's pretty cool. And then in the garden, we just have our winter vegetables still out there, carrots, radishes, acorn, squash. We have some zucchini out there. We have cantaloupe out there. I'm not sure if it's going to ripen or not. I don't know that Oregon is hot enough to ripen cantaloupes, but I'm kind of looking forward to trying those out. Probably be delicious, I would imagine. Let's see. Oh, and so that's the apple tree business. Last week I also talked about we started that shed about 2 weeks ago, I think. And now the roof is on. Oh, yeah, apple butter. Oh, that sounds fantastic. Thanks, Moose Girl. Yeah, we'll have to do some of that for sure. That sounds absolutely fantastic. I love apple butter. So the well pump house shed combo now has a roof on it and most of the siding on it, and we have an electrician lined up to come in and run us some power, just like outlet power. The well is already powered, so that's not a problem, but hang on one sec. Okay. I don't know how many of you live where it gets really cold. Oregon doesn't really get really cold, but it gets cold. And it freezes sometimes. You'll remember last year or during the winter, we had a ice storm, left us froze up for weeks. Well, a week anyway. And anyway, so your pump house, you don't want your pipes freezing up out there. So we need, you know, we like a little, like to put a little light bulb out there and keep it on. To, you know, it provides enough heat to keep the pipes from freezing. You know, like I say, in Oregon, especially where I live, we get snow pretty much every year, but it's just maybe days of snow, not weeks of snow. And it's pretty sporadic. So we're at about 1,000 feet here at my house. We're kind of close to the ocean, like 45 miles away. And that Pacific Ocean does a really good job of keeping you warm, basically. You know, the heat from the ocean, which I know the ocean is cold, but it's not freezing. But it kind of keeps the temperature pretty moderate. So we don't have to worry about freezing pipes very often, but we do have to worry occasionally. Anyway, so that'll be a thing where we, just keep it warm in there. And it's going to be really nice, too. You know, we poured that concrete slab. You know, we actually made a building, like a real building with a foundation, you know, and real walls, all that stuff. So it's going to be a solid building. And a lot of room, whereas before it was like kind of crawling into a doghouse to do anything to the well pump or the tank or the control circuit, anything. It was a pain in the butt. Anyway, so that's coming along really good. I wanted to shout out a couple people. Beth Z has been kind of just helping me, maybe encouraging me to put, you know, this show up somewhere else. I know that Grimner does that normally, but I don't have the logins for putting the show up in other places like Spreaker and BitChute, and I don't know where else he put it. But along with posting the show on BitChute, I am also going to be putting the notes over there. So for some people, it's easier to use BitChute. Which I kind of get, I guess, but and for some people, it's just, I don't know, easier for them to use. And plus, you know, just getting the show out there and driving people back to Real Liberty Media, I think is going to be important in the long run. Not necessarily for me. I mean, so many of you guys have such great information. And I'll be really happy when, you know, all the shows kind of come back online. I'm really looking forward to it. So anyway, thank Beth for that. And I just wanted to shout out Rob Works also, because he turned me on to a new video game called Eve Online. And let me tell you, some really fantastic game. And I think one thing that I like most about it is I'm playing on my Linux computer, you know, just sitting right here with beautiful graphics. It seems like it's a really fun game. I know he's not around this weekend. He's on a little road trip. But I just want to thank him for turning me onto that game. And when I started playing the game, he wrote it in the chat room. He said, send my apologies to your family. Because I guess he assumed I would get pretty addicted to it. And that's probably true. It'll probably be my go-to game for a while anyway. All right, drink time. And then last but not least, go Brewers, go Badgers, and go Ducks today. The Ducks aren't playing today, but the Badgers and the Brewers are. So let's get into this. I think this is going to be an interesting show. I'm not going to go straight to the conclusion, but I think you will all end up there with me as I get to it. I'm going to post a link in the chat room so anybody who wants to, let's see, how do I do that? Copy. Let's try this. If this doesn't work, oh, jeez, what the heck is that? Let's see if that works. Okay, so the link is in the chat room. Maybe I should have done it a different way. Let me try something else. Oh, yeah, here, let's do this. Sorry for the dead air. We'll get over it. Nope, it's the same. Okay, so anyway, if you want to follow along with me, feel free to do so. If you're listening on a podcast or download, the link will be in the show notes and you'll be able to kind of follow along. But this is kind of the history of the Wuhan lab. And I just noticed a couple things that I thought were interesting about it. One is, who knew that this was founded in 1956? I mean, that's kind of a long time ago. But some important things come along here. And this is one of the things I found really interesting right off the bat was the 2002-2003, the little window there. If you're following along, you'll see this. I'm just going to read it to you. The pictures probably aren't really important. In 2002-2003, in an outbreak of severe acute respiratory syndrome, 774 people die worldwide. It's quickly established that the virus spread from bats to civets and then to people. It's quickly established that the virus spread from bats to civets and then to people. I'm going to say no. I'm not buying that right now. Because of what we've gone through recently with this whole kind of BS that this was, that the current COVID pandemic supposedly was, you know, because this virus spread from bats to something to people. And I think anybody with any actual scientific background knows that that's not the way it happened. Oh, by the way, I have a little entertainment for you. This is what the current state of the science feels like to me. So let's see if this works. Oh, maybe. Oh, there it is. It's coming.
Well, we did do the nose.
The nose?
I'm a hat, but she's a witch.
Did you dress her up like this?
No.
Yes, a bit.
She has got a wart.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt.
A newt?
I got better.
Burn her, Eddie!
Burn! There are ways of telling whether she is a witch.
Are there? What are they? Tell her!
Tell me, what do you do with witches?
Burn her, Eddie!
And what do you burn apart from witches?
More witches!
Wood! So, why do witches burn?
Because they're made of wood.
Good!
Oh, yeah.
So, how do we tell whether she is made of wood?
Build a bridge out of her.
Ah, but can you not also make bridges out of stone?
Oh, yeah.
Does a wood sink in water?
No.
It floats.
It floats. Throw her into the pond.
What also floats in water?
Bread. Apples.
Very small rocks.
Cider. A great gravy. Cherries.
Mud.
Churches.
Lead.
A duck.
Exactly. So, logically,
if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood.
And therefore...
A witch!
A witch!
A witch!
A witch!
Very good. We shall use my larger scales.
Okay, I thought that was pretty damn funny. And that's from Monty Python in Search of the Holy Grail, one of the greatest movies, I think, ever. Maybe not. But I just remember that movie came out, I think, when I was in high school, and my buddy and I mean, back then, if you remember, I think, well, some of you probably don't remember because you're younger than I am, but it was like cable just was becoming a thing then, and when they played a movie on cable, I'm kind of air quoting cable for whatever reason, but when they played a movie on it, you would watch that movie. I mean, that movie would be on constantly, just over and over again. And so my buddy and I watched it like, I don't know, you know, 50 times or something, because it was on for the whole month. You remember like HBO or Showtime or something like that? Anyway, so any new movies, it wasn't like today where they have like a whole day. In fact, I don't even know how it is today because I don't do that. But back then, like the new movie would play the entire month and it would play multiple times a day. So he and I just watched it over and over again. And what was really funny is then, 30, 40 years later, my stepson and his buddy are telling me about this great movie, and they are literally quoting lines from the movie because they watched it so many times. So if you haven't seen Monty Python in Search of the Holy Grail and you have a gloomy, wet day, give that a watch. I mean, holy crap, is that funny. And then You know, my whole point of that was, you know, it's a witch trial where they use the most ridiculous logic to to determine whether that person's a witch or not. But yet, when you look at what's going on today with, you know, all of the censorship on social media sites, that's kind of the logic that's going on. I mean, honest to God, the most ridiculous things get banned. And I think most people, you know, most people have gotten smart to it. And basically, eventually, you know, I think people are going to move away from it and find something else. And then that something else will be corrupt. And, you know, the cycle will continue to repeat. But, you know, kind of along with the science being completely a wreck, the science, I still have faith in science, by the way. But I don't have any faith in the science. But let's just take a listen to the leader of the free world, as they call him.
Hypothetically, when you build a charging station, it's like back in the day when my grandpa worked for the American Oil Company back in the turn of the, in the 1920 in that area. They went from state to state convincing people that they put, allowed them to put 20,000 gallons of gasoline under the ground. They didn't want them around.
Kind of funny that that guy, I'm not kidding, it's just amazing that that guy supposedly is the leader of the free world. Okay, I got to move some stuff around on my screen here because I want to go back to this infographic. So back to the, oh, and I wanted to tell you a kind of a story, and I'm pretty sure I've told you this before, but I just kind of want to put myself in this picture here. So, man, there is no, I guess we're just going to have to start doing more shows. I think that's the bottom line. Okay, so I did a full career in the U.S. Public Health Service, which is kind of the public health service of the United States of America. So we provided care to, well, people on Indian reservations, people in federal prisons, and the U.S. Coast Guard, and in some other places you could get sent to also. So, you know, I was, you know, a young man. I was in really good shape back in 2002. And, well, actually it doesn't matter. The bottom line is the U.S. Public Health Service, after the attack of 9/11, the U.S. Public Health Service was directed to create a rapid response team. So they asked everybody in the Public Health Service if they had special skills that, you know, went beyond like me being a dentist, if I had any other skills that would be useful in this rapid response team. And you didn't have to be a member of the rapid response team, but if you wanted to, you know, you could, you know, it was an additional duty. And, you know, I mean, back then I was pretty patriotic. Like I said, I was in good shape. I was looking for fun stuff to do, and I thought, oh, yeah, this might be cool. And I've always been somewhat of a hacker. I mean, going way back, I could tell you stories, but it'll be totally sidetracked. But ever since I understood what a computer was, I've been trying to make them do what I wanted them to do. So I learned some programming languages along the way, and I learned, you know, how to make computers do what you want them to do instead of them doing whatever they want to do to you, I guess. Oh, okay. I'll call you Beetle. So in 2002, because I think it was about a year after the attacks of 9/11, one of the things that the federal government was looking for were people with, you know, computer experience. So they called me up, those in Washington, D.C., called me up, and I was actually in here in Sheridan, at the federal prison here in Sheridan, Oregon. doing my dentistry thing, and the Public Health Service called me to D.C. to be assigned there for 2 weeks, and they said I would be doing something with my computer skills. And basically, what I was doing for 2 weeks, oh, I'm going to tell you a little side here. So when I arrived in D.C., I think there were about 12 of us who were going to be carrying out this mission, basically. And I'll tell you what the mission was: to gather information for, I think it was Tommy Thompson was the head of he was the first head of the Homeland Security. Tommy Thompson was the first head of Homeland Security, and he had this really bitchin' office, the War Room, it was called. And I'm going to tell you about this War Room. So after we had this little discussion out on the steps when we first gathered there, and the guy who was in charge of us was going to take us into the War Room, he said, so when we were out on the steps, he said something about their security system, and I said, but I could probably own your entire computer system in about 60 seconds, and he kind of laughed, and he said, oh, how would you do that? And when I told him how I would do it, he was a little pale, and he goes, yeah, you're right, you could do that. So I probably got a little special attention while I was there to make sure I didn't do anything wrong. Of course, I had no intention of doing anything wrong. I was just there, enjoying myself, basically. But anyway, so we went in this building, and I can't even tell you what building it is, not because it's top secret or anything. I just don't remember. I mean, I was not a city boy. I was not really into politics. I was, same as I am today, a redneck and a dentist, and I just wanted to use my other special skills in whatever way they could be used. Okay, so he takes us into this building, and we're walking down the hallway, and he goes, okay, just stop right here. And, we all stop in the hallway, and he says, here's the door. You literally couldn't even see this door on this wall. And I don't know what kind of magic happened that, he had somebody open the door for us and we went in. But then inside this room, and of course supposedly it was really secure, but inside this room they had projections of every country's news on the walls. So 3 out of the 4 walls in this room had multiple screens. And I don't mean screens. The wall was just a wall. It was probably painted some way to make the projection screens display properly. But anyway, so there were news, all the news channels on the walls of 3 of the 4 walls in the building. Then, the volumes weren't on because that would have been ridiculous. But, how news stations, even back then, that was in 2002, they'll run little tickers along the bottom, or when they're talking about a certain topic, they'll have a headline up or a streamer across the screen. Or sometimes you were just looking for imaging, like to see if there was something going on in that country that, Tommy wanted to know about. And then, so we were kind of monitoring the news constantly. But also, we were on terminals, on computers, and we would go search for certain bits of information. Of course, terrorism. We had a bunch of terms that we had to search for. And by the way, these were 12-hour shifts. I would say it sucked, but it didn't, because I love sitting at a computer, doing stuff and, experimenting with stuff. And just trying things out that I know. Anyway, so this 2002 on the infographic and the SARS virus, it was interesting for me to remember that on that assignment back in D.C. in 2002, one of the things that we had to track daily was SARS. And there was something else. I think hantavirus was also kind of active at the time. That was in the southwestern United States. So we had to kind of look for hantavirus cases and SARS virus cases and terrorist chatter and stuff like that. Anyway, it was a pretty fun assignment, but the only reason I brought that up is to kind of make this a little bit more personal, I guess, because I was involved in tracking the SARS thing. Let's see. Then if you look at 2003, it says another outbreak was quelled. And that was apparently because the virus escaped from a high-level containment facility in Beijing. And it says several times. And then, let's see, the next thing in 2004, you see the European Union signs a decree leading to the creation of a biosafety level 4 laboratory at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. In 2005, Xi, who is mentioned in the 2004, you see the 2004 window there, it says Xi Xingli, also known as Xi Xingli, a director at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, discovers a natural reservoir of coronaviruses in bats living in caves in southern China. Okay, and then Xi's team in 2005 uses human SARS antibody test on bats to determine that samples from three horseshoe bat species contain antibodies to the SARS virus. And then in 2005 to 2010, Xi's team focuses their research and sampling of coronaviruses from horseshoe bats at Xitao Cave on the outskirts of Kunming, the capital of Yunnan province in western China. Xi and her team write a paper published in the Journal of Virology that shows how horseshoe bat viruses can be manipulated to infect and attack human cells using an HIV-based pseudovirus. That's in 2007. In 2008, what's that, 14 years ago? Yeah, like 14 years ago. Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance receives its first grant from Fauci's NIAID, Risk of Viral Emergence from Bats. He proposes to examine the pathogenesis of these new viruses and a pool of available bat viruses which have not yet emerged in humans. What else is interesting? Oh, you see Hillary Clinton there. Let's see, they wrote a paper about that. Construction begins on the biosafety level 4 lab at Wuhan Institute. And then in 2000, oh, it looks like the dates are all jacked up. It says in 2005, but it looks like there's a date behind that. It says Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, his NIAID colleague Gary Nebel, and Francis Collins, Director of the related National Institute of Health, write a flu virus risk worth taking for the Washington Post. The article notes that researchers have created a laboratory virus that does not exist in nature, and that important information and insights can come from generating a potentially dangerous virus in the laboratory. All right? So Fauci, you know, obviously deeply invested in making dangerous viruses. So in 2011 and 12, they're studying these bats again. Let's see. Another bat virus causes a second epidemic in 2012 and 2013. Known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. This time, the intermediary host animal is camels.
Sure.
More than 840 people die worldwide. So still not very, the mortality rate isn't real high. Let's see, in 2012, without taking, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so the dates are jacked up. Is this, I wonder if this, just hang on, let me see if I, no, I was wondering if I changed the size of my page, if those dates would change. But anyway, so you can, but I guess the idea here is the clear progression, and you can see who's all involved here in this operation. And basically you see Fauci just constantly involved in the making of dangerous viruses and making them able to attack human respiratory cells. And here's the deal. I can't think of a reason why you would need to have that. There's no other reason you would want to make viruses attack human respiratory cells unless you were going to use those viruses to attack human respiratory cells, right? Now, we're going to move into some other things here, but this is a, I thought this was a really good kind of summary of tracking this Wuhan lab and all the people involved in it. And really, these windows are very short to read, each one of these little panels on this page. Pretty easy to follow along. And I just thought it was a really good summary, although it kind of looks extensive. But it is pretty much a summary. And, I encourage you to read it and just do it, you know, kind of read it and see what you find out. See if you learn anything from, you know, that little summary. But what I'm going to start talking about now basically is, you know, how does one person get away with basically mass murder or serial murder or I don't even know what you would call it. I think this is so far beyond any of our kind of standard definitions that, but I do have some ideas. I mean, I'm going to share them with you. So let's start out with some definitions. Let's look at a serial killer first. It says a serial killer is typically a person who murders three or more people in two or more separate events over a period of time for primarily psychological reasons. There are gaps of time between the killings which may range from a few days to months or many years. And then there's, I took that from a list of serial killers, and trust me, nobody's killed thousands of people who is defined as a serial killer. And if you want to go see that list, of course, the link is going to be in the show notes. And then let's look at mass murder. Mass murder is the act of murdering a number of people, typically simultaneously or over a relatively short period of time and in close geographic proximity. The FBI defines mass murder as murdering four or more people during an event with no cooling off period. So a serial killer will have a cooling off period. A mass murderer will not have a cooling off period. A mass murder typically occurs in a single location where one or more people kill several others. A mass murder may be committed by individuals or organizations, whereas a spree killing, so a spree killing is kind of like somebody gets a wild hair and kills more than one person in more than one place over a very short period of time. And it's usually, you know, it's usually like the best example I could think of is a guy pissed off at, you know, his wife's family or vice versa. And he goes and kills all of the members of her family wherever they live in multiple locations. And when he's done, he's done. It's like, you know, there was a single purpose for it. But whereas a spree killing committed by one or two individuals, mass murders differ from spree killers who kill at two or more locations with almost no time break between murders and are not defined by the number of victims, and serial killers who may kill people over long periods of time. So then I looked at homicide and what situations allow for governments to kill its own citizens. It says international law to which the government has agreed by treaty. So these are, I guess, laws that supposedly prevent governments from killing their civilian population. Preemptory norms, which are de facto enforced as obligatory on all countries, such as prohibitions against genocide, piracy, and slavery. Okay, the type of state killings include capital punishment, where the judicial system authorizes the death penalty in response to a severe crime, though some countries have abolished it completely. The lawful killing during war, such as the killing of enemy combatants. Now, this is not your civilian population, but, you know, just a mass of people. Drink time. Next round on me, barman. Lawful use of deadly force by law enforcement officers or military personnel to maintain public safety in emergency conditions. I thought that was really interesting. That is somehow a forgiven act of mass murder, I guess. Extrajudicial killing, where government actors kill people, typically individuals or small groups, without judicial court proceedings. So, I guess Waco might be an example of that. Okay, war crimes that involve killing, war crimes not authorized by the government, may also be committed by individuals who are then subject to domestic military justice. And widespread systematic killing by the government of a particular group, which, depending on the target, could be called genocide, politicide, or classicide. In some cases, these events may also meet definitions of crimes against humanity. So, of course, then I was thinking, okay, what are crimes against humanity? Because, I mean, you know, COVID. Okay. Crimes against humanity are certain acts that are purposefully committed as part of a widespread or systematic policy directed against civilians in times of war or peace. They differ from war crimes because they are not isolated acts committed by individual soldiers, but are acts committed in furtherance of a state or organizational policy. The first prosecution for crimes against humanity took place at the Nuremberg trials. Well, thank God for that. Initially being considered for legal use widely in international law following the Holocaust, a global standard of human rights was articulated in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948. Political groups or states that violate or incite violation of human rights norms, as found in the Declaration, are an expression of political pathologies associated with crimes against humanity. So, crimes against humanity have since been prosecuted by other international courts. For example, the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and the International Criminal Court, as well as domestic prosecutions. The law of crimes against humanity has primarily developed through the evolution of customary international laws. Crimes against humanity are not codified in the International Convention, although there is currently an international effort to establish such a treaty led by the Crimes Against Humanity Initiative. Oh, I have, okay, sorry. Unlike war crimes, crimes against humanity can be committed during peace or war. They are not isolated or sporadic events, but are part either of a government policy, like vaccine mandates, although the perpetrators need not identify themselves with this policy. In other words, You don't need to say that you are a supporter of vaccine mandates, but you're just going to go in, like, let's say, some governments, some states here in the United States are calling in the National Guard to force the civilian population to take the vaccine. So basically, I'm trying to, and I mean, I'm a redneck, people, right? I'm just a simple dude raising some food on a little 5-acre plot out here in Sheridan, Oregon. But I'm just saying, like, if you wanted to make a case against, you know, the federal government, it looks like you could, you know, kind of follow some of these things and maybe get somebody to stop the ridiculousness that's going on. And you know what? This really sucks. I just realized I'm missing something. I'll find it. Have no fear. Okay, let me continue here. Anyway. Well, that's a whole list of stuff. So this is some of the terms that come under this crimes against humanity are war crimes, murder, massacres, dehumanization, genocide, ethnic cleansing, deportations, unethical human experimentation, extrajudicial punishments, including summary executions, use of weapons of mass destruction, state terrorism or state sponsoring of terrorism, death squads, kidnappings, forced disappearances, use of child soldiers, unjust imprisonment, enslavement, torture, rape, political repression, racial discrimination, religious persecution, and other human rights abuses. Oh, okay, now here's what I was looking for. So then I come across something that I thought was really interesting, because I am no longer affiliated politically with one side or another. I think they're all evil bastards. And, you know, I hear these arguments all the time about how much better Trump would be at one thing or another. But let's not forget, all of this started under Trump's administration. And Trump was, I'm not going to try and defend the guy or prosecute the guy. But, I mean, not only did he encourage people to get the vaccination, but, I mean, look at who he had to he was getting this information from Fauci. And Fauci is the one who was, you know, he was the gifted child at the time. You know, everybody was talking about Fauci getting the Nobel Peace Prize, Fauci being People's Man of the Year, you know, blah, blah, blah. And everybody kind of, I think, had those, you know, stars in their eyes about Anthony Fauci at the time, that he was going to save humanity. But, you know, really, the absolute opposite is true. And if you go back and look at some of these definitions of serial killer or mass murderer, I mean, you could definitely make an argument that Anthony Fauci is a mass murderer. I mean, his hands are directly in this, and probably that's why they are not, you know, actually making him out to be a criminal. I mean, number one, probably, you know, if you do believe that this is a conspiracy theory to get rid of a certain amount of the population, well, he's fitting right in, right? But if you go back and look at some of these, some of the definitions like mass murderer, serial killer, or even spree killers, you know, there's some things that kind of would make you think maybe this is why Anthony Fauci was doing what he was doing. I mean, maybe he wanted some kind of fame. Maybe he didn't intend to be the world's greatest mass murderer. But as far as I can tell, he's not immune to prosecution. Just because he works for the federal government, he's not a world leader. No war. He didn't declare war. He can't. He's just a dude in a virology department, basically. What power he had was to distribute, you know, billions of dollars of our money into, you know, in a way that would inspire making viruses more lethal to human beings. Now, I suppose one of the problems with this ever becoming a criminal investigation ever is that you would have to have some people, you know, somewhere in the system, and I mean the entire system, not only the federal government, but international laws, you would have to have somebody who is actually interested in pursuing that kind of investigation. And I just don't think there's anybody there. I mean, for years and years, we have pumped money into NATO, basically, into, you know, we basically supported them. And we basically have kind of created this environment where it's almost out of control, that a guy could actually do this. He could actually divert money, even though he tried to hide it by sending money through certain groups, and then those groups sent the money to promote making viruses more lethal to humans specifically, that who's going to hear these cases? I mean, who's going to file these cases, number one? I know. I actually started compiling a list a couple shows ago of all of the people that thank you, Beth. I agree. I started making a list of all the people who were bucking the vaccine mandate stuff. And it seems like there's more and more kind of power building behind just refusing to take the jab. But there's still a long ways to go before we can actually put Anthony Fauci on trial. But I think that's what should be done. That he's kind of a lone actor in this whole thing. I think if you look through that infographic, you're going to see that even when Barack Obama, made a limitation, they actually prevented this kind of research from going on. Fauci basically gave the bird to Obama and went ahead and did it anyway. Went ahead and funded this kind of research when the President of the United States and his boss, Fauci's boss, said, look, we're not doing this anymore until we figure out if it's going to be, you know, figure out how to make it safe so that we don't have any accidental escapes from labs or so that somebody doesn't weaponize this thing. And Fauci was just like, screw you, I'm doing it anyway. And he did it anyway. So if there isn't some culpability on Fauci's part, I don't know. If nobody can see that Fauci... yeah. If nobody can see that Fauci did this purposefully and that he created these viruses through his actions, and he is responsible for, let me just go check now. Let's see how many, because I looked it up today because I just wanted to see. So, and thanks you guys for listening today, by the way. It was fun to have you all here. But I just want to look at these numbers. Of course, my computer is going to be slow as crap. Nope. It's coming up. Okay, so come on, totals. Let's go. So there's still, okay, I don't know if this is correct. It says that there's under 5 million deaths in the entire world, and that's fine. Let's see, in the United States, 712,000 deaths in the United States. And then, so Fauci has got to be responsible for at least 4,845,000 deaths, and he should be tried for them. And this is what I was kind of, this is kind of why I went through this whole serial killer, mass murderer definition thing. He doesn't really fit. This is kind of on a scale that you can't even put him in those two categories. He's definitely responsible for killing people. Yeah, I know, Beetle, right? I mean, there's probably more coming. Let's see how many 6.4 billion vaccine doses have been given out. 6.4 billion vaccine doses have been given out. But anyway, yeah, I had some notes here about DeSantis. You know, he was a guy who was bucking the vaccine mandates. Oh, and I made an announcement earlier in the week that I was going to talk about forced evolution, but we're just not going to have time for it. Man, that hour went by so fast. But let me just give you a hint of what I was going to get at, kind of talk about. And that is, so they're trying, the elitists, Bill Gates, for example, are trying to eliminate the ability to raise animals for meat, which means they want us to not eat meat, number one, and not raise meat because apparently, you know, they create so much greenhouse gases and they're so fossil fuel intensive that we, you know, it's so much better to have GMO grown vegetables and meat substitute made from GMO'd vegetables. And I guess at some point I'm going to have to actually do the research, because I swear to you, in my lifetime, I have seen so many more people become kind of gut ill, you know, intestinal problems, stomach problems, pancreatic cancer, diabetes, you know, there so many diseases have skyrocketed in the last 30 years, I think, maybe 40 years. And I went through my own thing with gut issues that I had to figure out, and I figured it out. And, of course, the two things that bugged me the most were gluten and dairy. Now, I will have to say, I can now, as I did when I was younger, but not quite to the extent, but at least now I can tolerate a certain amount of gluten and a certain amount of dairy. But I have to be really careful. Like, I'm not buying any kind of just regular stuff. You know, it has to be kind of special. Like, I'm not... Good. It's a long story, but you have to be careful out there, because if you don't think that it's a topic for another day, let's just say the bottom line is that I think a ton of gastrointestinal issues have sprung up since we started using GMO and consuming GMO foods. And I don't even mean necessarily directly consuming GMO foods. I mean even indirectly, because they grow GMO foods and feed them to the meat stock, and then we consume the meat, and I think it still has an effect on us. Anyway, I thank you all for joining me today. I look forward to the, you know, seeing you in chat and seeing you next week. And I hope everybody stays safe. Have a great week. I will see you at least next Saturday, if not before. Hey, thanks for listening to the show here today with me, Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. I invite you to join us on reallibertymedia.com and rlmradio.xyz. If you're interested in learning the truth, if you're interested in learning about liberty, and I mean true liberty, and if you want to have some fun, come on over to reallibertymedia.com and rlmradio.xyz. Thanks. Bye.